This is CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning. It is the Gareth Cliff Show right here on CliffCentral.com. Thank you so much for having us on. Chinchilling here with Mabali Moloi.
Yes, thank you, Sia.
There we go. Because chinchilling is the operative term here. And also Ben Karpinski.
Hi.
And where is the one Gareth Cliff?
You know, we did not discuss that even in the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we just pulled a Ben. Sorry, Ben.
Where you pull it, Ben? Sorry. When I host the show, Sia, I'm a lot more professional.
I tell everyone what's
happening. We get to things.
I mean, so often, sometimes we often confuse and we forget where you are, whether it's a golf course, or whether you're Sun Citying or something.
No, I always tell you guys where I am.
Yeah, but we forget because, you know, we aren't good people sometimes. We apologize. Well, Gareth Cliff is not here. He is in Cape Town, still with back-to-back meetings. He's trying to, you know, daddy's out there. What's the term? Getting bacon, cooking the bacon, frying
bringing
the bacon.
Home the bacon,
bringing home the bacon.
Tasting the bacon.
Okay, he's bringing home the bacon and we'll fry it. So all good in the hood there. But you do know that next week, from next week Monday, he's off again, right?
To where?
What? he's where?
Can you move your fists from your hips now just to listen to what I have to say first? Yeah. He's going off finally on this trip that he's been planning for a while, and he's been so, so excited about it. So.
You know, look, I mean, I would say this to Gareth's face, and I have many times, but the hypocritical nature of this individual, he always craps on, oh, these people who are still on holiday, they're not relevant to society.
Uh-huh.
And here he is.
Here he is in the beginning of February.
Oh no, guys, I'm going to go on holiday.
Yeah, okay.
And then he's going to crap. Oh, can you believe it? It's already the end of Feb.
Yeah.
Oh, can you believe it?
Spot on, Ben. Spot on.
I feel like I'd love to stand up for Gareth in this conversation, but I really can't.
No, you can't. Yeah, because you're going away on holiday too.
Oh, no. No, that's different, because I was going to say, in Gareth's case, the evidence and the facts are just all, you're just saying fact here. But for me, I haven't taken a holiday.
No, you're going to take a holiday in February as well.
I'm going to, because I haven't in such a long time.
Yeah, okay.
Apart from the 2 week break that we all got. So
it's just me and you, huh?
You know.
When it comes down to caring.
That's what it is.
Excuse me.
The backbone of this show is not Sia and it's not Gareth.
While I fold my arms.
You can do whatever you want.
And side-eye both of you. Excuse me, Mr. Golfing every 2 days and sun-sitting. What do you have to say?
Just because I do cool things doesn't mean I do a lot of things. This is what you always forget. I'm here in the trenches.
Did you go to Cambodia last year?
No. See, now you're just making stuff up. Now you're
where
just being
you
a
go?
Dick.
Rwanda.
Yeah?
Exactly.
Sure, I went to Indonesia.
Exactly. You see? So put that all together. I think it will
actually... But yeah, these are very short trips.
And he was working. He was actually working.
And this isn't the Ben Karpinski show either.
Just saying. Yeah. You're going to be sipping mojitos on a beach.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep it moving.
Exactly. You guys are busy judging us. Yeah, thank you very much. We're past this. Well, anyway, we're excited for Gareth. He's saying some time off. He deserves it. He'll be skiing somewhere in the world. So that's all good. But as we continue on with the show, folks, don't you ever feel bad for your Uber drivers?
I mean, not unless I'm misbehaving in their vehicle or treating them horribly, which I never do.
Oh, really?
So no,
I say that with such certainty.
No, I mean, why must I feel bad for my Uber driver? He's, you know, he's doing a job.
Mm-hmm.
He's providing a service to me. He gets rewarded for it. Where do I start to feel bad for him?
I feel bad. I guess I'm totally opposite to you then, because I know my friends and I are the type who will just straight after a night out and someone is there to pick us up, we are still taking the party into the car.
Yeah, that's annoying.
I would throw the
lot of you out.
I reckon it's just after nine, Uber drivers are going...
I would have an assistant who opens the door while the car is still moving and just starts pushing annoying passengers out. I don't care.
But what do you expect when you're picking people up at 2 a.m? No one is going to be like in the middle of writing their thesis.
Yeah, and see, the problem with being drunk is that you always think you're funny because you're around other people who are drunk. They laugh at everything. Now a sober guy's got to hear your cuck story about how you spilled a drink at a bar.
Yeah.
And then you said this thing to this guy and then he's like, oh, just please, just give me 5 stars at the end.
Call it a day.
Yeah. And then worst case scenario, some idiot who couldn't handle their liquor then decides to vomit all over your car.
Happens, yeah.
Yeah, that must be hell of annoying.
So let's just get the truth straight from their mouths. These are Uber drivers who actually are talking about their pet peeves. So maybe you should be making note of this and trying not to do this in future.
All right, what would be the biggest pet peeve?
The biggest pet peeve? I mean, you're getting into my car.
Yes.
My home, my sanctuary, the last thing I want you to do is leave trash in my car.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like when they think I don't know they spilled their drink in the back. Because
try
I know.
Try to clean it up.
If there's a ride 6 to 10 minutes and you are adamant about the right way to go, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that you're going to still get there in 6 to 10 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
take this road, take that one. It's like, yeah, this is pretty good.
My pet peeve is someone that eats, at least without asking. If you go to someone's house that you've met for the first time, do you just open up a bag of chips and eat over their rug? I had a passenger come in to the passenger side with a plate of cake. As we were driving, just eating it with their hands.
With their hands?
With their hands. Yeah, just right there.
You savages?
Yeah.
When you pick up a bunch of drunk people and they want you to stop at a fast food place.
Oh, yeah, like Jack in the Box.
Yeah.
I've had that.
And it's like 2 a.m, yeah. You pick up a bunch of drunk people, yeah. And then they're like, can we stop at McDonald's?
And also just some of the sound effects, too. Someone just came in, it wasn't very late at night, and they had an apple. And I knew they had an apple.
Letting you know, everybody.
Did you ever get hit on? You must get hit on a lot.
Oh, yeah, all the time, yeah.
Most women, I would say, you know, don't hit on them at the workplace.
I don't like that. I wish passengers knew. Oh. I don't like when you ask me for my phone number.
It's not a dating service.
It's not a dating service, no.
The strangest thing for me is getting hit on in a pool. If you're gonna hit on me, get your own ride, okay? Get your own ride to hit on me.
I had one Uber passenger that said he liked female drivers because he would like to look at their legs.
Oh my God. Yeah, that sounds right.
If there's no one else in my car and then they automatically sit in the passenger seat. I'm like, come on now. Like, I drive a Yaris.
If someone gets in my car and gets up front, I only have a problem with it if you don't speak the whole ride. Like imagine if you're driving and I got in. Yeah. And I said, hi, how are you?
Yes, exactly.
I think like the best part about it is when I ask them, so, you know, why do you sit up front? Because like, occasionally I will ask them why people sit up front. They'll be like, well, I feel weird sitting in the back. And I go, well, why? Do you get motion sickness? No. I just feel like you're driving me somewhere.
I have had plenty of passengers farting in my car. They fart when the windows are up too. I'm like, roll the window down, then pass the gas.
This is one. If someone is playing music, they will reach out and they will twist they will turn. They will fiddle with the stereo. Like this one really drunk guy, he was like leaving the bar and he was like turning it up. Like the bass speakers are like, I'm turning it down. No, man, for show. No, this is my car.
And for sure not. For surely not.
Look, to actually justify how many problems Uber drivers have with us, this whole clip goes on to about more than 4 minutes. Yeah. So they could spend the entire day just going on.
Can you imagine them having a drink and just going, oh, you never guess what this happened or what has happened?
Not even a drink. They need, what's it called? Like a counseling circle. It's just like Uber Anonymous.
And like the weirdest thing I've done in an Uber was take meows to the vet. And even then, like, she was contained. She's a really good passenger.
Right.
She doesn't say much.
So the driver gets there, and then you come out with meowses, and she's nice.
And she's like, wow. And I'm like, yeah, so just going to go to the vet. It's like really close. But I mean, it's like a 20 rand Uber away. It's so close.
Yeah. So do you have to like ask him for permission first, or do you just let him know, listen, I've got an animal here. I'm taking it to the vet.
You know, is it one of those things that you should ask for permission? Like, it's not like she's going to vomit or shed hair. Mm. Like I said, she's contained. She's a great passenger. She gives 5 paws every time. But like, that's when I look back, like, that's the way I've never ever, like, I would die if I had to vomit in an Uber.
Oh, no.
I would.
Complete disrespect.
It would just be dreadful. But people just don't. You know, the whole thing about being in someone's house, the guy made a point there.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like, I didn't come into your house and eat a pack of chips in your rug.
I never thought of it that way.
People never think of it that way. They just believe that these cars are just taking them and they're theirs and they can do whatever they want. And they're probably farting in the back as well.
Yeah. Another interesting point, which is something that I don't imagine they have a problem with in America, when they said that people just jump into the passenger seat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know here at home, in the middle of those horrific protests where Uber drivers were being attacked, a lot of the drivers would say, please sit in the passenger seat because then it doesn't look so obvious that I'm an Uber driver.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's obviously a problem that they don't have there in the States.
Well, look.
But it is interesting that some of them get annoyed when you jump into the passenger seat.
Yeah. Oh. But look, to the other side of things, I think a lot of Uber drivers just want women to sit next to them because they're perverts.
That too.
Nasty freaks. Well, apart from
the coin there.
Apart from the obvious, and it's no surprise here probably for you guys, just the obvious of being drunk, being loud, asking for the aux cable. Uh-uh. When my favorite song comes on, of course, now I'll think this is James Corden with Carpool Karaoke and I'll want us to sing together. I'm that person. Yes, is it annoying? I totally understand. Do I think in my drunk mind it's absolutely appropriate and fun? Yes.
Am I well within my rights to throw you out of my car while it's still moving as an Uber driver? Yes.
So. Oh, you're not too fun. Just give me a little pop in the throat. Just like punch me in the throat. I think that's more appropriate. Don't like kill me by pushing me out. But I have to say, no judging. Don't judge me here. But that is not the worst that I've done in Uber.
What is the worst?
Have you had coitus? Have you coitus?
Ooh.
No, making out doesn't count. No, making out, I feel like making out is appropriate. But I've actually had to change in the back of an Uber.
Why?
Because I was between leaving somewhere. I was in Cape Town. I was between leaving somewhere and going to another event.
Were there no bathrooms at the event where you were leaving from? Well, you not find a corner somewhere to change?
Were we changing top or bottom?
Just my top and putting a different jacket on.
Oh, okay, that's not nearly as offensive as then taking your pants off.
But now in retrospect, I feel like I should have warned the guy.
You should have asked for permission, not just really warning him.
I was just like, halfway
imagine someone
through.
Walks into your house and just drops trowel.
You know, Sia, that house analogy is actually the perfect way to get people to understand when they're crossing the Uber line.
Exactly. Once again, I never thought of it that way. Now that I'm thinking it of in that way, I apologize to that guy, wherever you are, Uber driver in this world. Because the thought dawned on me, that awkward moment when like your head is stuck in your t-shirt and you're thinking, why am I in this situation again? Is this exactly appropriate? So, okay, yeah. That, I think, was the worst. So it's interesting what these Uber drivers have to say and what they're really ticked off by. But it's understandable as well. Yeah.
You know, that whole aux cable thing I also feel is just annoying. Like, come on. This is my car.
But why?
It's my car. Why do you think that you get to arrive with your aux cable and plug in your shitty music?
But if you ask me whether I'd like to plug my phone in, that's appropriate, right?
Yeah, if you get asked or if you get offered, that's fine. But don't just go in there and assume that it's okay for you to like start bombarding my car with your stupid beats.
Yeah, but at the same time, at the same time, the last weekend I was subjected to an Uber driver. I kid you not, he played a Mandoza playlist only. And not just Nkalagata, the big ones. No, there was these other Mandoza songs I've never heard of at all. I was just reading it on the screen there. I was like, well, if I'm subjected to that, then maybe I also have room to complain here.
I don't know.
You don't buy it?
No. I'm not entirely convinced. I could be swayed, but I'm not entirely convinced.
Well, here's another Uber driver who's actually retelling one of his craziest stories.
Rush hour, so it was like 5-6 o'clock. I get a request from this girl off the UCLA campus, and so I pull up and I see this girl walking towards me, and she looked like she just got out of bed. So she walks over, she looks like she's just tired. She comes up the window, she's like, "Hi, are you Eddie?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She goes, "Hi." She gets in the front seat, which I'm like, "Oh, right. God." So she gets in the front seat and she goes, "We're going to the corner of Franklin and Whitley in Hollywood." And I go, "All right." And she goes, "How long will that take?" And I was like, "Well, it's rush hour now, so like, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour." She goes, "Ugh. Owes me, Jesus." And I was like, "Are you okay?" She goes, "That's fine." We're driving. We start talking about just boyfriends and girlfriends, dating. All of a sudden, she comes on the topic of drugs. And she goes, "Have you ever done drugs before?" And I go, "No, I haven't." So then she goes, "Oh, well, just so you know, we're gonna pick up drugs."
Oh, God.
And I go, "Oh." I go, "Oh, so we're going to pick up drugs." We're driving along, we get to Hollywood, Franklin, Whitley, we're at the corner. This guy, she's texting, has not responded yet. We're just sitting there on Whitley, just kind of like, "So what's next? What do we do next?" Finally, the guy responds, "Blue Nissan, Northwest Corner." I'm like, "All right, that sounds shady." So she goes, "Okay, wait here." And I wait there, and she goes back out. I waited for probably like 10 minutes. So she gets back in the car, take me back home.
driving along and she pulls out two like dime bags from her bra. And she goes, okay, do you have any like, do you have any paper? And I was like, no, I was all I had was like a wrapper and that's like, she goes, okay, fine. So she pulls out like a 20 or something like that out of her pocket.
Oh no.
Rolls that boy up, pops open the bag, leans the chair back, right?
Oh, no.
And just in my car. And I was like, what? Like what? I was like, yo. So she hits and she goes, okay. Now I can go to work. I was like, what do you do for a living? I was like, what do you do when you can get high before you even leave? Oh my God, dude.
Anyone here done drugs in an Uber before?
No. You see, now you're involving me in your illegal criminal activity as well. You are definitely being rolled out of this car while it's still moving.
I'm trying to figure out what's worse. Actually letting me be part of your drug deal by having to wait for your drug dealer with you while you go and buy some drugs, or the fact that you take them in my car.
I would love to know when it is acceptable for Uber drivers to deny you a ride. Because that to me sounds like a perfectly fine situation for the Uber driver to say, I'm sorry, ma'am, I am bringing this trip to a halt.
Mm-hmm.
Please get out of my vehicle. I refuse to take you where you want to go. Like, in what instances are Uber drivers allowed to deny us?
Well, they should be able to.
They should be able to.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
With all of the mess that they have to deal with.
But guys, do you realize there's a great movie to be had here? Someone that like Will Ferrell and like an Anchorman style kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
where him and his friends are all Uber drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that, the 40-year-old virgin, that ensemble cast yeah. that they put together.
Steve Carell in there.
Yeah, can ensemble. You imagine these guys making like, what's that guy's name? Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
These guys can make the ultimate Uber movie.
Yeah, they could.
Where they're all stoners or whatever they are because that's their character, and they all drive Uber. And then they have like a walkie-talkie system where they... Again, I'm just sharing too many ideas, and now Hollywood's going to be rich off me. But that'd be a cool movie.
That would be a great movie. I'm seeing it being filmed in that Modern Family mockumentary style
yeah,
as well.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. And all sorts of scandalous things happening in Ubers. That's actually a...
Because like, it's such a melting pot of society, the backseat of an Uber car.
Mm.
And like, you know, because taking a kid to school, like a snotty child, you take his kids to school.
Mm.
So now you've got the dilemma of someone's child in the morning. And they're going to be sick, or they've got like breakfast with them still because they're running late.
Yeah. Oh.
And then you can get people like Sia making out and changing. You can get people having affairs in the back of Uber cars.
Didn't happen all at once, Ben.
You could get...
Two separate incidents.
You could have that one time that a celebrity hopped into my Uber. Like yeah. I drove so-and-so Ooh. From this party to that party. Yeah. Good storyline, Ben.
Actually a freaking whole series. But back onto WhatsApp. Someone says here, Gareth and Ben sound so alike that you could probably host a show with just one of them and get away with it. I don't think so.
Yeah, okay.
Nah.
Ben doesn't.
I don't hear it.
Ben doesn't complain.
But maybe
either.
That's just because we've been around each other that long.
Yeah.
Okay, to each his own. And then someone else said, holy fuckballs, can Sia stop being a hoe in relation to yesterday's Quentin chat? Oh.
Quentin van der Berg.
I'm picking up a theme here, Sia. Consistency in the feedback around your name.
There's some consistency with the feedback around your name too.
Yeah, it's not ho though.
Well, is this the part calling the kettle N-word? Anyway.
Sheepers.
Okay, should I just carry on with other news stories?
Save us.
Yes, please. Let's look at other news.
So you will remember that explosive hashtag MeToo social media campaign, right? It was all about raising awareness of sexual harassment and violence. Well, it would seem that that intent to raise awareness has now spread to the religious community in the form of hashtag Church2.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
This sounds bigger than Me Too.
Oh. It was launched by Twitter users Hannah Pash and Emily Joy, and hashtag Church2 has prompted users to share stories of sexual abuse in church settings. Now, a number of prominent religious and religious-adjacent figures have been embroiled in sex abuse scandals for pretty much since the beginning of religion. More recently, there has been Roy Moore. He is the Christian Dominionist and Alabama Senate candidate who was accused of assaulting and harassing several teenage girls. Then there's also Tariq Ramadan. He is an Oxford Islamic Studies scholar who has been the subject of allegations of several instances of rape, harassment, and assault. And then, of course, there are the thousands of Catholic priests and bishops who over the past decades have been accused of child molestation. It is certainly true that many religious communities' insularity combined with their frequent focus on women's sexual purity renders these spaces as particularly fertile ground for sexual harassment or abuse. But hashtag Church2 isn't the first coordinated social media effort to openly critique sexism and other forms of oppression within Christian communities. Earlier last year, there was hashtag Things Only Christian Women Hear. And then there's also been hashtag Empty the Pews, which both went viral, largely but not exclusively among evangelicals. So let's go through some of these tweets that have surfaced since hashtag Church2 started to trend.
Okay.
All right. So Shannon Dingle says, as a friend's youth group, in response to a talk on purity and modesty, I went with tears in my eyes to a female volunteer. I shared that I had been raped and felt shame about not being pure. She responded by asking if I had repented for my role in what had happened. Yes, because, you know, when a priest fiddles with you, it's totally your fault too. Elizabeth Halford says, following the hashtag Church2 hash with interest, many Me Too stories at the hands of the church and me, I was made to sign a purity contract at age 11 and witnessed a man confess from the pulpit to having sex with a child. He was praised for his bravery.
It's just like, there's so much to get angry about here. You know, like, in your neighborhood, if there's a crack den or a whorehouse or a brothel, call it what you want, and there is proof that there's either human trafficking on the go here, there's, if it's illegal in the country, or prostitution, whatever, those get closed down. People are willingly taking their children here because obviously they're stupid. I mean, that's why they're going there in the first place. And there's sexual violation happening. These churches should be closed down because don't tell me because Jesus is watching you violate children that it's better than you violating children.
It is upsetting because in a church setting, the reflex action is for the church to immediately try and protect its own and itself.
Sure, and they hunker down like no one else. I mean, the ANC would just wish they could be as good as the church.
Yeah, it really is upsetting. But yeah, hashtag Church2, aiming to, you know, blow the whistle or to raise awareness. But I mean, it's not as if people don't know about the kinds of insidious things that happens in church.
Yeah, I mean, like,
we all know.
And as a responsible parent, can you really be forgiven for sending your kid to a church knowing what's happened? It's like, well, you know, I just really thought if I could send my kid to Afghanistan for a war for 4 years, he'll come back totally fine.
Yeah,
you can see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to happen. It's the same thing. Send your kid to church, it's like sending them to war. The only thing is they're going to be sexually violated rather than like physically violated.
Well, I get what you're saying, Ben, but I also think that's slightly unfair to compare.
Okay, so yeah, you know what? I'm generalizing. I'm going a little bit too far, but where there's smoke, there's a pedophile. And I tell you what, there's smoke coming out of that Vatican all the time.
All the time. Black smoke, white smoke.
And there's candles, and one is too many, Sia.
What I struggle with is the culture that still is placing these people on this pedestal, and it's they can do no wrong. And even you hear of these cases where a child is violated and they go to someone whom they trust and they try to speak out, and it's this thing of never, 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 Father Johnson would never do such a thing. That is what is even sadder, in my opinion, as well, because how else are we going to move past it? Put aside the fact that these people are despicable by taking advantage of these young kids, but it's how you actually put a stop to this culture. And I think really, if it does take more people coming out and speaking out, then so be it. But this nonsense has to stop.
How about people maybe just begin with doing away with altar boys and altar girls? Like, why do you want children around you for that?
Yeah,
how about all of you grown-ass men do that by your damn self?
What is the purpose? I'm not
exactly
Catholic,
so I don't
know.
It's not like you're mining coal here. You can carry your own candle.
I mean, really?
You can hold your own hymn book.
Is that the only thing?
That's why those altar boys and stuff are purely brought in there for pedophilic sexual orientation. It's not like they need to, like, I don't know, varnish the pews or whatever. That's a horrible euphemism. But it's not like they need there for labor.
No.
And if they do, then the church has more than enough money, then make some formal employment opportunities for people.
I would assume that the church would say something along the lines of, children are innocent and pure, and the service you need purity.
Yes,
no, I'm pretty sure they say I'm pretty sure they say children are sexy. That's what they say.
And then pedophiles are not innocent and they're not pure. And when you have children in such close proximity to them, then they use that as an opportunity to do horrendous things.
And also, though, I'm not going to speak as someone who's informed in all these various topics, but case in point, even my own father, who's a priest, has said, I don't know how these priests who are, for example, Catholic or in other denominations, work and function just as a human being if you're living on your own without a partner, without being married. Like, I don't know how that became a thing, where now just because you are the leader of a church, you should not have
It's some stupid rule sort of that was implemented by a group of old men because they could.
Well, guys,
it's a stupid rule.
But for what? Just like, how do they?
No, it's just a rule. You get to make up rules every day. They made it up and they said, "Well, this is how it will be."
But guys, you not see the thread here? They've always historically been pedophiles. Pedophiles don't want to get married. They want to molest young children. That's one of the. That's the first rule of pedophile club. So your dad's completely right, but that's because he's a normal, fantastic human being who has love and compassion.
No, I'm joking.
Pedophiles don't have that. Yeah, it's like, I like sport. That's why I'm here on the show. I'm going to talk about sport. Mm. If you're a pedophile, you don't suddenly become, I don't know, an HR manager because you love helping people. You become a priest.
Yeah, or
it's
you
much more in line with what you want to do in life, and that is children.
Yeah, or you try and work at a school.
Yeah,
you know.
Or you're the PT teacher who always has those tiny shorts, even though it's middle of winter.
Exactly, and you get to be in the changing rooms with the kids, and it doesn't look weird
in the showers
because you're the PT teacher. So it's totally fine for you to be in the change rooms with the little kids.
And I'm sorry if I'm sounding cynical and rather mean towards certain people here, but guys, we live in the age of information. We can't be naive to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and also, what are we saying about ourselves if we're saying that a child's protection is not nearly as important as protecting the credibility of the church?
The sad reality is people think that way, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They're indoctrinated to think that way.
That is why I'm asking the question. What does that say about ourselves?
It says our priorities are messed up.
It's unacceptable.
Because what business does a child have making something like this up and lying about it? You don't know anything at 6 years old except for the fact that, hey, I was taught that this is my no-no area. No one should touch me. But, yeah. Anyway.
See, it's funny how priests become very Afrikaans when you say it's a no-no area.
What do you mean? Oh. Ben. Okay. It took me a while, but I eventually got it. Someone on WhatsApp says, the real problem is that it's people who are not called to the church to become priests. It's like gay men or pedo men that fool themselves into thinking they have a calling in the church because they don't fit in common society.
Yep. Goes back to the pedophile argument.
Okay, so as in what they're saying is they aren't doing it for the right reasons.
It's a good point. I mean, you could say the exact same about politics, is that the people who should be serving society aren't the ones getting into it. People who can't work in society are the ones who become politicians. And we see that how often?
Yeah.
Any one of Jacob's ministers?
Mm.
They then go, you know what? I'm actually really good at this. I know a lot about water and sanitation. I'm going to become the minister of water and sanitation. No, that doesn't happen.
But if you are so called to be in the church and you realize that there's a pedophile in your midst, why are you still protecting them?
Exactly. Take an axe to him.
Yeah.
Then you become like the Punisher, like Thomas Jane in that movie.
Yeah. Just...
Yeah, someone else on WhatsApp says, it's not just priests. I have a friend who's currently fighting a court battle for visitation rights as her child is being molested by the father. Jeez. Oh. And the court won't take away his visitation rights as they don't have a clinical psychologist report. And the psychologist won't see the child because they need both parents' consent and Daddy Dearest won't sign the paperwork.
Sheep, that is just evil.
That's too much red tape.
That is nasty.
That is It's also difficult. It's never black and white.
But more so, and this isn't comforting as well, but eventually this child will grow up and they'll be able to have their own rational thinking, and they'll find out one day how dirty and mucky and yucky their father is. Really, once again, it's not a comforting thought, but hopefully that's the silver lining if the court and the system isn't exactly working in your favor. So, shucks, yeah, that's unfortunate to hear.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, there is at least one lady who is still seeking justice, the South African model who says that she was whipped by Grace Mugabe, now saying that she wants Grace to be prosecuted. You will remember that the former First Lady avoided arrest and prosecution after our government, yes, granted her diplomatic immunity. Gabriella Engels has now told Zimbabwe's private standard newspaper that she would like the new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, to hand over Grace to face charges here in a South African court. Pictures of Engels with an injury to her forehead inflicted by an electric cable wielding Grace were wildly circulated last year, and it sparked a lot of anger in South Africa and beyond. The former First Lady was reported to have been incensed to find the model in a Sandton apartment, which was being rented by her sons, Chatunga and Robert Jr. She's alleged to have snatched up the cable to beat up Engels. So after our government granted her diplomatic immunity, she was able to get away scot-free. But since the new president has taken over in Zimbabwe, Gabriella is saying, "Oh, hello there, Mr. President. Can you please do the right thing and have Grace sent back here to face charges in a South African court?"
Do you really think anything will happen?
I have no idea.
Well, it depends on her actual relevant power, because she's had the power, but now she doesn't technically have it.
But you're asking...
Wasn't AfriForum trying to take her to court as well?
I think AfriForum stepped in. They were representing Gabriella. It was a nice PR exercise for them. I don't know. I mean, I don't imagine... I could be wrong, but I don't imagine that this is very high on Emerson's list of current priorities so soon after taking over from Robert.
Mm-hmm.
He's got bigger things to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
But I could be wrong.
I think he's just trying to stay afloat right now, just trying to fix this mess and make sure that he just sees another day and another week and another good decision for the country to like him.
Or maybe, since the story attracted so many headlines last year, he might look at it and think, oh, here's an opportunity for me to make some other kind of statement by entertaining this woman's pleas, and he might just decide to do something about it. You just never know with politicians. They're always strategizing.
So, you know, the SAB down in Cape Town, they've got that water spring that everyone's been tapping into at Newlands. So what they're actually going to start doing as day zero gets closer is they're going to start bottling the water in the bottles that they have, which essentially are functioning beer bottles. So all these bottles are completely clean. They run a very tight ship there. I mean, this is a world-class facility. But they're going to use a lot of the bottles to actually put the spring water in, distribute that to help alleviate the crisis. But the Muslim Judicial Council is not having none of it.
Okay.
Absolutely none of it.
What is the issue?
Because they say that this water will not be halal.
Oh.
Because it's being bottled at a brewery.
Oh, right.
Not a chance. You cannot have this.
So how do you halalify it then?
Well,
I mean no disrespect, but
you just don't bottle it in the brewery because
the problem,
can't drink.
So the problem is that where it's being bottled.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this?
So
Do we know whether the spring is actually on the SAB property or does it just belong to SAB somewhere far off?
Well, this is why these guys make a lot of money, because essentially water makes beer down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So the major body of beer is water.
Mm.
That they're getting all their water for free essentially through the spring. It's a natural spring.
Mm.
Great business, huh?
Mm.
But the thing is, they're not being dicks about it. So they're doing whatever they can to make sure that the water from their spring can be distributed. It's like you can go there right now and fill up your 25-liter can.
So you are filling up for free. That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Are you filling up for free or they're selling it?
but now these they are literally distributing these bottles. They're doing their bit. Like it's one of these things. It's like in times of crisis, big companies, everyone needs to get involved, and they're totally jumping on that. So good for them. But now this Muslim judicial board, they said no. Sorry, we did, no, not a chance.
Wait, so the board. What are they saying? Are they saying now that they must stop bottling this water so nobody gets water?
They're saying that no Muslim people should be drinking this water.
Oh, okay.
I get that.
But now,
I mean, that's entirely their prerogative.
Look,
then.
Some people are saying these guys have lost touch with where they are in the world. This is a major crisis. These guys are trying out. You can't forbid people from drinking this water because there's no water. And they're even going to the step where they're actually inviting the Muslim Judicial Council to come to the brewery, the place, to see exactly how these things are bottled. How there is no beer or contact with beer at all, and merely it's just an affiliation. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So therefore, this water is good to go.
Look, it's entirely the board's prerogative if they want to say that they don't want to drink that water. To me, that's no different than somebody saying, I don't drink tap water, which is why I drink only bottled water. Entirely your prerogative. You do what you want to do.
It's just that they're making it an ethical thing, although this water is coming directly from the ground into a glass bottle.
But that's what... Ethics is what being halal is all about, though.
Exactly.
It's about standing by your beliefs and values. So really, as you are saying, Mabala, I'm actually agreeing with you there. If you say that it is not halal, then go for gold, but don't stop anyone else from getting water from there. Yeah, if they were stopping everyone, that's the problem. But if you really do believe that it's not halal, then okay, just find some water elsewhere. Because I know with my Muslim friends, it's a whole... process and procedure.
Yeah, but that whole process of finding water elsewhere, there's a lot of options around that.
And you know, if it gets to a point where things really become dire, then they might have to rethink their ethics.
Or some staunch...
to do whatever you want.
Or some staunch Muslims may seem that this is a test of their faith and this is a sign, it's a challenge from God that they should hold on to their beliefs, whatever the case is. Because I know, like with halal meat as well, it's about how you slaughter the animal. Supposedly you have to slaughter some sort of part of the neck first.
Well, it's the draining of the blood and all. Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot of things go into it, sure. And that's just how you live your life, sure. But what I'm saying is that this is a very definite crisis. There will be no water coming out of your taps. Like, that. People must never forget that line there. As in, it's not there. That whole on tap saying, you have no tap to be on.
And that's why I'm saying, should things become really dire, then they're going to have to rethink their priorities around ethics, because we can't exactly live without water. So some calls are going to have to be made.
But it's just like the perception is that they're literally emptying out beer bottles and putting the water in. There is no beer in this process. These bottles are sanitized like they would for anything else.
Yeah.
This is a world-class facility and you're getting pure spring water.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe they should pay a visit to their facility to see how it's all done, if it will help appease.
But then they're in a beer bottling facility and you can't have that.
But then that's just not allowed. You know what? It's just, it's all a lot. It's all a lot.
It's not going to happen.
And I don't know if you noticed that people were making fun of Helen Ziller.
Well, it's so easy nowadays.
Because they were
new?
Well, they were making fun of the fact that she now is seemingly taking on the entire South African weather service. Last week, she was on a current affairs show on BBC Newsnight, where she was talking about how the weather service models no longer worked. Quote, the drought could never have been foreseen. This is now Helen speaking. The South African weather services have said to me their models don't work anymore in an era of climate change. And the Premier's statement has not been taken well by the SA Weather Service. They fought back, saying that it is disingenuous and extremely opportunistic of Helen Ziller, coming as it does in the midst of a water crisis. Basically, the Weather Service are now upset with Helen Ziller, saying that she's trying to blame them for the current water crisis in Cape Town. You see, in the middle of a crisis, this is exactly what happens. People start to lose their heads. People start shouting and screaming at each other. This one gets blamed for this. That one gets accused of that. And before you know it, it's just chaos.
Hey, Mom Helen, I don't know. I really, really, at this point, don't know. Like, we just don't even.
Yeah, look, she should probably not tweet, but she will not stop.
I just don't understand. The reason why I say I don't know is I don't see the game plan here. What role are you trying to carve out in society? You have done amazing things in your political career. Some people may debate that. But regardless, you are now, you step down and you're done. What do you want? Do you want to be like the great auntie that people rely on and you're one tweet away? Can't you just sit back at home and really wash your fruit in one cup of water and enjoy the rest of your days, honey? Like,
look, she is still the premier. And, you know, there are a lot of expectations on various people within Cape Town for a solution to be found to this whole situation. I mean, Mosimane now saying that he's reached out to Cyril Ramaphosa, asking for a meeting, asking that the two of them, you know, devise some other kind of strategy so that they can deal with the situation. Mm. So, look, Helen has to be seen to be making some other kind of statement on the matter because she is still premier in that province. So,
yeah, look, the difficult thing is that obviously she wants to engage and everything she said will be taken in isolation and all that kind of stuff, and that's what Twitter does. Mm. But she does not help herself a lot of the time. Remember yesterday we were talking about those underwater springs, that Reclaim Camisa project?
Yes.
So she actually addressed it in a tweet yesterday saying, everyone posting about this and talking about this is an excellent initiative. I am told that two of the major springs in that project, are including the one that feeds the Leeuwenhof, are now rooted into the Maltina Reservoir. So there's a reservoir that's getting some of that spring water. Engineering costs and logistics huge in proportion to water yield, but progressing. Mm. See, but that's all. That's all that needs to happen. It's just this constant communication about what's going on, rather than the grandstanding of your feet in a bucket.
In a bucket,
like that helps no one.
Also, you
here's
know,
a nectarine in a cup.
Also, she's making herself a prime target for all the people who hate her and who just want to fire shots at her. Like you are literally setting yourself up. You are saying, I'm here, I'm the bullseye, come for me, and they will.
And where's her team at this point? And really take brand manager, PR person aside. Even her husband. Can her husband just step in and say, listen, honey.
Her statement.
Yes.
I mean, he's not really in the limelight.
He's a bit of a statement.
Yeah,
he is a bit of a statement.
I'm not saying he must be in the limelight. Just tell your wife to put your phone down and actually wash her fruit in peace. She doesn't have to Instagram her toes. Hey, girl, hey, please. No. Spare us. Anyway, so it is a Tuesday morning, which means tomorrow is the last day to vote in the One Plan Pet Parade.
Oh, this is a tough, this is a tough competition.
The countdown continues. And if you have not voted as yet, firstly, what have you been doing thus far? But secondly, rather, go to cliffcentral.com and vote for who you think looks most like their pet.
Well, also who you think is just the best owner-pet combo, just the best pets. I mean, let's not just put ourselves into lookalikes here, Sia.
Thank you for the Kopinski campaign effort there.
Let's broaden our fondness, our appreciation, and our acceptance.
This message was paid for by Meowsers and Bear.
Yeah. Who, incidentally, you can vote for in the pet parade.
There you go.
By going on to cliffcentral.com/pet parade. Anyway.
So I'm slightly offended there's only one cat, but hey. You know, there is representation, so do the right thing.
Oh, you really are standing up for your people here. Yeah. And if that wasn't enough of a motivation for you to actually go out there and vote, you could, by simply voting, stand a chance to win cash as well. So far, only a few votes separate the top three. I heard whispers around the office that it's literally about like 5 votes or something that's separating the top three. So your vote could make the difference here. And also on that note, don't forget to come along to the One Plan Muddy Puppy. Ooh, Muddy Puddy. The Muddy Puppy event. This is the event that's taking place at the Warkhaven Dog Park on the 4th of Feb 2018. If you don't know what that's all about, well, Muddy Puppy is a 4-kilometer obstacle fun run or walk, whatever you prefer, for you and your dog. It consists of obstacles with crawling and climbing and jumping and sliding and slipping and wagging and barking and lots of mud. A portion of the proceeds from the stay will be donated to charity, so you'll be having fun and you'll also be doing good as well. So you can book your tickets now by visiting the One Plan Pet Parade webpage on cliffcentral.com. And always remember that with One Plan Pet Insurance, you can make sure your pets get the best medical treatment they need from as little as 133 rands per month. So all you have to simply do is SMS Cliff to 31644 now, and One Plan will call you back. So that's SMSing Cliff, CLIFF, to 31644. It's as easy, as simple as that.
And that is a wrap.
That is a wrap. I think good innings, folks. Very, very good innings.
So Gareth will be back physically in studio tomorrow.
Yes.
And then Sia, just remind us, he is then away?
He is away from next week Monday. And that will, he'll just be missing that week of shows, plus another Monday. And then he's back on that Tuesday.
Okay. So yeah. Let's say we didn't warn you. But that's it. And then we enter February. Yay. It's the short month.
Well, Feb is this weekend, folks. Yeah, exactly. We're going straight into Feb this weekend. I'm excited.
Well, Thursday.
Yeah, one of those technical thingy-thingies. Exactly.
Special February day, Thursday, first.
Oh, what's special about it?
Well, people make up days all the time. Let's make this one special.
Oh, by the way, as we're wrapping things up, if you needed just to feel better about someone else in your life, imagine receiving a casual SMS from the bank informing you, while you, maybe some of you are still waiting for payday, that you have won 70 million rands. Mm. Yeah. This is exactly what happened to the one extremely lucky Gauteng resident after this weekend. You heard the lotto was at what? 110 million rands. Jeez. So this man, he's preferring to remain anonymous, says that he regularly plays the lotto, and he started playing the lotto 18 years ago. Back then, 18 years ago, he wasn't really a regular player, but over the years, the largest amount he'd ever won playing the lotto was 1,300 rands, which he says was only last year. And perhaps actually this was a bit of a sign for what was coming his way in just a matter of months. So just like he does every week, he spent 240 rands on his quick pick tickets through his bank for the Jan 12th draw. And then the next day he just received that SMS, 70 million rands. He says that he heard two messages coming in on his phone, one after the other. So he thought, ugh. Who is this? This might be like a please call me of all things. So he didn't pay attention to it. When he finally did check his messages, the SMS read, "You, the winner of the first tier of Powerball, Powerball Plus. An agent will contact you within 2 working days. Man. So he thought at first it was a scam. So then he just carried on running errands and going with his life for a couple of days, up until he actually got contacted by someone. So that's when he told his friends, like, yo, things are looking good. Life is looking better right now. He is a married father of three, and he just says that he does not plan on doing anything crazy just yet. He's seeking counseling and financial planning sessions.
That's smart. That is very, not normally what smart. Happens.
Oh, yeah. And then he also says that he's planning to simply pay off his debts and invest the money, and will ensure that his children's school fees are covered. He has one child in primary school, another in high school, and a third in university. So this guy actually has his whole plan in place, and it's really a healthy one by the sounds of it. Yeah, but he says that now, up until the money is really in his account, and he goes, actually, that month away in Bora Bora doesn't sound all too bad.
You know, if I ever got an SMS notification of that nature telling me that I've now have 70 million in my account, I would immediately like phone in and get a sick day. And then I would just lie in bed and just think.
You always
I would do,
say
I would
this,
do nothing else. Just think and let it sink in.
If you ever win the lotto, can you call me to
no,
think with you?
No, I'm not phoning anyone. I'm not even phoning my family.
Just call me to
I'm
think with you.
I'm just going to take a day to think. Just me.
and then we're going to go to an Italian spa to relax while you also think. This is how a positive influence starts. But folks, we're calling it a day. Thank you so much for having us on. It was a great show, done and dusted. Straight after this, we have an interview Gareth did with Professor Mike Broughton. He actually has written a book called What a Great Idea. And if you're feeling slightly down about the state of South Africa and what we do, and oh, this country is horrible, well, this professor has compiled a coffee table book of sorts, which is an interesting read that highlights various great South African inventions. They're the obvious ones like the creepy crawly, but there are all these things as well. Just scrolling through the book myself, I was surprised to see like we are attributed by the great inventions that we've made. So it's fascinating to hear him retell some of those things. But also this professor is very, very talented because he's part of the team that put together the Two Oceans Aquarium in Cape Town. He's also part of the team as well that worked on the various science centers that are around the country. So super, super smart, absolutely talented, and is putting together, you know, has really just put together this great nod to what we've done here in South Africa. So that's coming straight at 8. So until tomorrow morning, cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.